So we're talking with Carol Simontacci, the Crazy Makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children. Let's grab Carol here before we change the subject back to the adult problems. But did we cover all the ways in which the food industry is making our kids crazy, Carol?
Oh, no, I don't think we've even started on that yet.
All right. Well, I'd like
we
to hear more about
that. We got breakfast cereals and all that stuff.
Well, so you're talking about the high fructose corn syrups and what else?
I'm talking about some of those packaged entree meals that kids are purchasing by the millions. Do I dare mention any product names on the air?
Well, I mean, within reason. As long as you spread the guilt around, I think I'm all right with that.
Well, when you're talking about things like those little packaged Lunchables and those little packages of soups and so on, those are a nutritional nightmare. When I was writing the book, I interviewed a teacher, and she said, please tell the moms to stop sending those to school with their kids, because after their kids have had that for lunch, you cannot control them after lunch, because some of those little packaged entrees can have up to 60 grams of sugar per serving, and in addition to that, somewhere between 800 or up to 2,000 milligrams of sodium. And again, we were talking earlier about, you know, the sodium-potassium link. It can send those kids into jitters, confusion, anxiety, inability to focus, concentrate, and so on. So those are really a nutritional nightmare.
And do you believe that these companies know this and just don't care?
I doubt they know the connection between the sodium potassium and the mental connection, because to be honest, I had difficulty trying to figure that out myself. When I was writing the book, I was looking at what people were eating and then how it was affecting their brain, and I'm looking at that high sodium content. And by the way, it's not only in the kids' entrees, it's also in packaged adult entrees as well, and virtually any packaged food is really high in sodium. And I spent a lot of time in my biochemistry books trying to understand how that was affecting the neurological system. And what I found is that when you're dumping in huge amounts of sodium, but you're not eating a compensatory amount of potassium, it throws off the electrical system. And we know that the symptoms of that would include confusion, anger, inability to concentrate, agitation, and so on. But that's well documented in the biochemistry literature, but I doubt the manufacturers are reading that. You know, the only thing that they're concerned about is whether or not it causes cancer in laboratory rats. They're not doing that same type of research on the brain.
All right. Well, let's pick up there then on cancer and nutrition coming up in just a moment. Also, how this also affects adults, the other things that are making us crazy in our foods and what you can do about it. We'll start with a conversation about caffeine next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. The Crazy Makers, Carol Simontacci on Coast to Coast AM, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children. We'll refocus again on the same things here for adults. The culprits that are in our foods that are driving the statistics as well as the experience of various mental disorders up in the United States. And Carol, let's talk about caffeine as we get back into this again, because I don't know. I try not to have too much caffeine. I really do. But I am aware of when I am, because I can definitely feel it affecting my metabolism, or at least I think I do. And then I remember reading these news stories that say that caffeine has no effect on your body whatsoever. So,
oh, I know. Don't you love those?
Yeah, but tell me about, so what do you think and how much coffee can we be having before it starts making us crazy?
I don't know. 1 or 2 cups a day is not going to bother you. But, you know, I'm so glad you brought this up, because I just read an article the other day that was published in, U.S. News and World Report a few months ago, talking about the increases in the amount of caffeine coffee that teenagers and children are consuming. And, you know, it seems like, when I wrote the book, I talked about coffee, but I put it into the adult section, and I talked about how it affects the brain. For example, it's the most widely used psychoactive drug in the world. It enhances the effects of dopamine and so on. It stimulates noradrenaline and reduces calming neurotransmitter serotonin. I mean, so it has definite effects on the brain. But again, I put it into the adult section, but what I read in this article, again, is that kids are really dosing up big time on caffeine. And this kind of came to my mind about a few years ago. Somebody called me and said, by the way, Carol, they're putting a one of the little coffee kiosk things in the high school. And I said, no, come on. Why would they do that? That's ridiculous. But apparently this is now like the drug of choice for a lot of kids. And we're seeing huge amounts of caffeine being ingested now by teenagers and children. And one of the experts that they interviewed in this article said that they have done no research at all on the effect of caffeine on a developing brain.
Well, the theory that I've heard from some of these news articles about caffeine is that it doesn't actually give you a jolt. If you are a regular caffeine consumer, it just brings you back to plumb.
Just like any
addiction.
Yes, like any addiction. So plumb, that's not a good place to be. You need to be at plumb by just having a natural diet.
Okay.
You know, but anyway, and one of the things that they noted is that caffeine doesn't improve the accuracy of your work. It only makes you do it faster, which is not necessarily something that we need to do. But there was a 2003 study in Columbus, Ohio. Middle schoolers were taking sometimes up to 800 milligrams of caffeine a day.
You know,
that is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, that's just that's middle schoolers. That's seventh and eighth graders.
Yes.
Okay.
And they said the children's consumption of soft drinks has doubled in the past 35 years with soda supplanting milk. I mean, so we're not on a good trend here at all.
I remember when I was a kid, I was a part of a student exchange program with some families in the inner city. And I spent some time every summer going down and through a church organization participating in school, in a summer school, in the inner city of Chicago, and then I would invite some of these other kids that I met through this kind of exchange program to come up and spend a week or so at our house in the suburbs, right? Uh-huh. And there was a kid who came up and spent a week at our house with his brother, and they, with their parents' permission, every morning my mother would serve them a hot cup of coffee. They were like 11 and 12. And every morning they got to have one hot cup of coffee in the morning with their morning cigarette, because otherwise making that up. That was back in the early 70s, because otherwise the kids would just get too jittery if they couldn't have a coffee and a cigarette in the morning. I always thought that was so funny. But now I guess it's a lot more common now than it was back then.
Oh, man, that is really scary parenting, I tell you.
Yeah, well, so let's focus a little bit then on the effects of caffeine, because you said that, you know, it doesn't make us work more accurately, it just makes us work faster. I don't know about that, because of the amount of caffeine that I drink, I think the show would be over in an hour and 45 minutes. But that aside, I mean, what is, you said a cup of coffee or not, a cup of maybe two. After what point does it start to make us crazy? And what is it that we should, if somebody were having five cups of coffee at work every day, what should we be worried about?
Well, we're going to worry about, first of all, it's going to lead to osteoporosis and increasing blood pressure, which increases the risk of heart attacks and so on. But, you know, I don't think that you can quantify, like, one cup is okay and two cups is not, because people react to caffeine in different ways. And we also, and I wish I had brought this study with me, there was a study that came out about a year ago saying that women reacted to caffeine differently from men. So apparently there's a connection between caffeine and estrogen, whereas it may make men focus and concentrate more. It actually makes it more difficult for women to focus and concentrate. It soups them up too much. And some people are very sensitive to caffeine, where even just a half a cup of coffee in the morning will make them not sleep at night. And I can speak with some authority on that, because if I have a half a cup of coffee in the afternoon, I will not sleep that night until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so it has different effects on us. We know that caffeine enhances the effects of dopamine. It increases hypersensitivity, hyperresponsivity. It increases the activity of the large muscles. It increases the energy metabolism throughout the brain, but it simultaneously reduces the amount of blood flowing to the brain. So while the energy requirements are higher, you're not getting enough energy in there to meet the demand. And that may be one reason why women find it more difficult to concentrate if they have too much caffeine.
Okay, and what other things are happening then with the body if one is having a lot of caffeine, what other things might be compounding that caffeine intake as well? What other things are we back to then what happens between the interaction between caffeine and sodium or between caffeine
well,
and sugar?
How about between caffeine and the adrenal gland?
Okay,
because
tell me about
we
that.
Also know that caffeine stimulates the production of adrenaline, so it's going to kick in your adrenal gland as well. And we know that too much adrenaline or too much cortisol, which is another adrenal hormone, will shut down your short-term memory. So it kind of starts to affect the brain then, even through stimulating hyperactivity of the adrenal gland. And we know also that if you keep stimulating the adrenal gland through caffeine or through ongoing stress, it really does erode your short-term memory. And my question is, and I couldn't find very much in the long-term studies on this, what effect that's going to have long-term, but my guess is it's not good. Some of the symptoms of an exhausted adrenal gland would be simply that life is just too hard to live, exhaustion, fatigue, severe depression, and so on. And so that's what we would find. Now the way we in this country would handle that is we would just drink more coffee.
Right.
Instead of, getting more rest and getting our body normalized, we just drink more coffee, which, again, spirals us downhill even more rapidly.
All right. Now, but what about Alzheimer's? I mean, it sounds like some of the symptoms you're talking about would describe somebody who's going to have the early onset of Alzheimer's. Is there a nutritional relationship to the rise in Alzheimer's?
Well, see, that's a really interesting question because Alzheimer's disease is not really diagnosed until autopsy. You can have some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's and not be true Alzheimer's. And some of the nutritional deficits that would mimic Alzheimer's would be a deficiency in vitamin B12, deficiency in iron, and so on. There's a couple others. Zinc would be another one. And so when somebody comes to me and says, gosh, my mom, she has beginning signs of Alzheimer's disease, I'd like to look at the nutrition first because you could be deficient in vitamin B12 for 5 years before you even start having symptoms, and that would be one of the most common nutrient deficiencies in the senior years.
I was hearing from somebody that the presence of lead in our bodies is much higher than we previously thought and much more pervasive.
Yes, and lead tends to lodge in bones. It replaces or deplaces calcium, and of course without the biological function of calcium. Some of the heavy metals, however, target nerve tissue, for example, mercury and aluminum. And, we're talking about Alzheimer's. Well, there's a connection between aluminum and Alzheimer's, but we also know there's a connection between mercury and all kinds of neurological disorders, not just autism that we were talking about before, but... And mercury is now pretty much ubiquitous in the environment.
Well, but for that matter, then, aren't SSRIs, aren't antidepressants, with all the number of people that take them and then, kind of release them naturally back into the environment, aren't we seeing scientific reports showing how much we're all carrying in our bodies of what other drugs other people are taking?
I've not heard that discussion come up in terms of SSRIs, but I have heard that discussion come up in terms of hormones. That women have been taking birth control pills and hormone replacement as they get menopausal, and that is now being, excreted into the aquifers or into the water systems, and estrogen is an extremely tiny molecule, so it cannot be filtered out through any municipal filtration systems, so we're all drinking our mother's estrogen, which is a scary thought. I mean, you guys ought to be really scared about that one.
I gotta be honest with you, drinking anybody's pee is not really a good thought for me. It doesn't really matter what they've had. I don't really care. I don't want to think about it. And yet, these are some of the things then that as you say, even maybe we only understand post-mortem, that we can't quite figure out all the things that are making their way into our system, or can we? Are there tests we can take to find out? Can we go to a doctor's office and just say, okay, tell me all the stuff that's in my body right now?
Well, he's going to say, okay, how much money you got?
Okay.
Where will we start? Well, I mean, there's tons of tests that you can do. Some of the ones that I love to do with people would be either a packed erythrocyte test, which is a packed RBC, red blood cell test, that will test for mineral balances and also heavy metals. That's an awesome test to do. I had someone come into my office just today that I'm requesting that they do that because this kid has suffered from severe ADHD from the time he's a little kid. Now he's in college. Nobody's ever looked at his heavy metals or his mineral balances. So that's one. Another one that is wonderful, and it pertains to the discussion we're having right now, is the detoxification test. How well does your body detoxify? That's a really important test, and it goes right to the heart of what we're talking about, brain function. Because if you're not methylating, if you can't detoxify adequately, all that mercury and the estrogens and so on, you can't get rid of that efficiently, so you're storing it.
And I like the fact that in your book, there's a whole chapter here in the book, The Crazy Makers, about foods you could be making and the diet you could be living on, the recipes that you suggest that'll help detoxify your body and replace it, sort of rebalance it.
Yes, I put that in there because when I sent the first draft of the book off to my editor, he sent me an email back and he said, Carol, your book is the most depressing book I have ever read. I am worried. I'm down to eating nothing but nuts and seeds, and I'm worried about those.
Exactly.
So he said, you've got to put some good news in the book. And so I did put some good news in there about how to fix all of this and what kind of foods that people want to eat.
Now, what about the vegetarians? And we're going to go to the phones here coming up in just a few minutes. And as you said, you know, very likely wherever you go, you are pelted about the face and neck with pebbles from angry vegetarians who say, you know, don't talk down a vegetarian diet. Look what's in the meat. What are you worried about with the meat? And how should we be ordering whatever meat protein we eat?
Well, you see, Ian, I really hate that question because it's a legitimate question.
And, yeah, you hate
and
those.
The problem is that we really are systematically destroying our food supply. You know, I mean, we should be eating fish, but we understand that the world's oceans are now polluted with mercury and PCBs and so on. So, I mean, that is a legitimate question. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't eat meat anymore. It means that we need to clean up our food supply and how we're providing these foods, because these are important foods to us. You know, fish is important, and we shouldn't be polluting our oceans in the world with mercury so that we can't eat that anymore. And we should be treating our animals humanely, you know.
Well, so, I mean, does that mean we should be having then completely organic, non-molecularly adjusted beef? I mean, should we be shopping locally, buying our meat from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, okay. We should, as much as we possibly can. We should be eating organically. We should be spending on our food dollars in local farms. Yes, we absolutely should. We should be honoring our local farmers because that's a very, very important thing to do.
Where are you on raw milk?
On raw milk?
Raw milk.
I think raw milk is awesome. It's almost impossible to get in most parts of the United States. I think there's a huge difference between raw milk and pasteurized milk. One is a food and one is not. You can guess which one is which.
Right.
But as long as that raw milk is not laced with hormones and antibiotics and it's, you know, with happy cows, you know, that's, I think it's a good food in a certain amount.
What about a totally raw food diet?
I think it's impossible. Because are you going to eat raw meat? I'm not. It wouldn't be safe to do that anyway. And I think that beef and chicken and pork and, you know, good sources of protein are very important to us. So you're not going to do that raw. You know, and I think, Ian, that raw food diet may be good for a short term to detoxify, to clean us out. But long term, I don't think it's sustainable.
All right. We'll get to everybody's calls then coming up. We'll give you all the numbers you need to join the conversation. And I want to get back to cancer too, because we touched on it a little bit now and here and there. But I want to have a longer thought or two from you on the crazy makers, how the food industry is destroying our brains and harming our children. Carol Cimentacci is a nutritionist and the author of that book. We'll talk more about your concerns and exactly what you think ails you. Might Carol be able to help with just some suggestions about your diet on the kind of things that are driving you crazy, the problems you can't get rid of, or the problems that you've tried to treat with pharmaceuticals that you've given up on, too? Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so we'll get to all of your calls coming up in just a minute. The Crazy Makers, Carol Simontacci, How the Food Industry is Destroying Our Brains and Harming Our Children. Just what she might be able to do for you, coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Carol Simontacci on Coast to Coast AM. Let's start off with the wild card line. This is Tom for Carol on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, go ahead.
Mr. Punny, looks like you've done it again. How you doing? Ms. Simontacci, I kind of have an observation. I'd like for you to comment on it, okay? I've kind of done a lot of gaming, on a certain video game, but this is what I kind of noticed, if you don't mind me asking, from a lot of the Europeans commenting, okay?
Yep.
They've actually noticed that a lot of young American boys, they kind of had a hard time distinguishing between whether, they're male or female because of the voice. And then I really started thinking, could that be because we have a whole bunch of soy based in our diets, either from fillers and, like beef patties or cheese or chickens being fed high amounts of soy?
Wow.
I'm sorry. This is what I call low-dose, long-term toxicity. You know what I mean? Okay. It kind of builds up over a period of time. But then I have something else to add to that, too.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm not quite sure how that ties into the video games, but go ahead, Carol.
Well, that's an interesting question because one of the chapters in my book, talks about soy-based formulas and the fact that soy-based formulas contain a huge amount of estrogen. And you're dumping into a young baby's body a huge amount of estrogen and imbalancing those hormones right at the very early time of life. And we don't really have any long-term studies about the effects of that. Now, we have some animal and some bird studies, which you may or may not be able to extrapolate to a human population, but we know that that does lead to, in the animal population, that high amount of sodium in infancy leads to aggression and self-destructive behaviors later on in teenage years. Whether or not it would lead to gender confusion, I don't know, because I don't think there's any studies done on that. But I think it's open to question, because a young baby, especially a young baby boy, produces a huge amount of testosterone. Well, what happens then, and that's normal, and it helps him to learn to think like a man. So what happens during that critical period of development if you dump in huge amounts of estrogen and imbalance those endocrine signals? I don't know. I don't think there's any long-term studies.
And what I mean by the video game world is this. I mean, you figure I've probably gamed over 15,000 people, so that's like a collective pool of kind of like a study, like a poor man's study. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, but what do you mean that through your gaming you've determined anecdotally that?
No, I haven't determined. Tom,
let me finish the sentence.
Sure.
You've determined that there's something amiss in the way that young men are developing.
Well, this is what a lot of Europeans from the United Kingdom, over in Europe, they actually declined our beef back in 1998, the EU did, because there were high, levels of hormones and also pesticides in it, too. And a lot of the Europeans are saying, hey, I'm kind of, I really don't want to offend you Americans, but a lot of the young boys, when, we're in this gaming community here, they kind of sound like young ladies. They really can't denote whether they're male or female just by the voice.
Okay, well, all right. Well, we'll let that hang out there, Tom, and I appreciate the comment. I think we can't ever forget that the EU also has some subsidy issues of their own to be concerned with, and whether or not they would want the competition from American beef in Europe or, for that matter, Asia. Hey, but that does bring back the question about girls developing early. Does that estrogen dumping, do you believe, account for why it seems like girls are developing?
Yes. Okay. And what he's and one of the things he's talking about there is in our American beef, they do lace that beef with hormones because it causes them to gain weight. And, obviously there's a connection there between us gaining weight as well. But, even going back to some of those gender issues, I don't know. And the precocious puberty, now that's becoming so widespread that some of the pediatricians are considering it normal for little girls to be developing breasts when they're 8 years old or otherwise developing.
Right.
I don't think it's normal at all. And I think that there is something to be said about the hormones injected into the dairy products and the beef, yes. And then, what we were talking about earlier about women taking so many birth control pills and hormones that is being now excreted into the water supply, we're kind of swimming in a sea of estrogen. I think it's all connected.
Interesting connections, too. I'm just not quite sure I agree with this basic premise that you can't tell the difference between boys and girls anymore. I'm around a lot of teenagers. That hasn't been my experience, but it's interesting that that was his. Let's grab Dale. He's west of the Rockies in Vegas on Coast to Coast AM for Carol Cimentacci. Go ahead.
Okay. When I worked in the psych department, we used to do studies with rats, and we found that nutritionally it didn't seem to make differences as to whether they ate organic or inorganic or what they were eating. They just ate whatever. But what if you want to get aggression and you want to get destructive behavior, we found that crowding the rats makes a big difference. The area that they have to live in, they become extremely bizarre in their behavior. Mm-hmm. And I'm observing society. We went to great lengths to pull the lead out of the gasoline and out of the paint. Okay, lead paint, we know it kills people. When we find it in the United States, certain people in China, usually heads of companies, seem to die. But I don't think there's a relationship between nutrition, as you're talking about, because you look at the Eskimos or the Native Alaskans, they don't get their veggies or fruit. It's and the Romans used to dump lead in their wine to sweeten it. The amount of lead and mercury that we get is negligible.
Okay, Carol?
Pardon me?
Your thought to what Dale said?
Well, he raised so many questions, and each of them has, you know, potential for a long discussion. There was an interesting study that came out of UK a few years ago. It was a rat study where they fed them. They wanted to see what would happen if they fed them the traditional British tea and sweet jam and crumpets and so on. And within a very short period of time, they had to abort the study because they were killing each other. So I think that his saying it doesn't matter what you feed the rats, I think that he would find great disagreement in the research community about that. And about dumping lead into the wine to sweeten it having no effect and the effects are negligible, I think that's kind of a silly argument because obviously those heavy metals have a huge effect upon the human body.
Okay.
And in very negligible amounts. You know, we're talking parts per million oftentimes that it will have a biological effect. So I don't think that that's justified.
I'm still trying to adjust to killer crumpets. Let's get to Josie, Texas, first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM for Carol Cimentacci. Josie?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've got three questions. Number one, what do you think about women in their 30s taking prenatal vitamins even though we're done having children? Also, what do children's vitamins, do have children taking vitamins at 7 and 8, does it make a difference in their health? Is it going to help or is it just, do you think it really has everything that it says it has in the bottle? And then my last thing is my daughter is 8 years old and she is growing hair under her armpits from the water and the estrogen in the water. Is there any way to stop it? Is there any kind of anything that I can do to slow it down or anything?
The estrogens in the environment are difficult to avoid because, as I said earlier, they cannot filter those out. And I don't know if there's anything that you can do about it except to avoid the obvious sources, you know, where you do want to eat organically raised beef and so on. And I recommend taking the dairy out of the diet altogether. I just don't think it's a good source of food anymore. So I think to avoid that estrogen exposure as much as possible. About giving your kids multivitamins, I think it's an important thing to do in terms of prevention. It's not as simple as just popping a vitamin pill, though, and then eating whatever else you want to do. The food has to be at the very foundation, and I focus on the food in the book. Now, I think you need to supplement with vitamins, but it needs to be a well-chosen vitamin, and I do make some recommendations in the book for how to do that. One of the most important supplements, I think, to feed a child would be the omega-3 fatty acids. That is critically important to a developing child. What your third question was. Obviously, I have a short-term memory loss problem.
I asked them kind of fast. It's about women in their 30s. They've already had children. Are prenatal vitamins a good way to go?
Well, it depends on the prenatal vitamin. There are prenatals and then there are prenatals. You want to make sure that it's a really competently put together product. I have some favorites that I like to recommend. You want to make sure that the sources of minerals are good, like you would avoid calcium carbonate, you would avoid magnesium oxide and iron. Most of the iron supplements are extremely irritating to the body, constipating in those prenatals. So you want to make sure it's a competently put together product. There's no magic bullet about a prenatal vitamin, though. Most of the time they slap a little extra folic acid in and call it a prenatal. I think it should be a little bit more complicated than that.
Were either you or your husband, Josie, an early bloomer?
No. As a matter of fact, I think I was about 14.
And 14
years old. And my daughter is 8 years old, and she's showing all the PMS symptoms and growing the hair. Like, it's just amazing. And that's when I started looking up online. In fact, I did see that they found some sort of solution to the water by adding a TFAML, or I forget the exact wording in it. I found it online that they found a solution to it, but they're not actually implementing it because they're still studying it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a difficult question, and it's, to me, it's very sad for a little girl not to be able to enjoy her childhood a little longer.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, Josie. Sorry that that's happening. Let me get to Eddie, who's hanging on Coast to Coast AM in Texas. Okay, yeah. Eddie, go ahead.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Good. You're talking with Carol.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
I'm calling in response to a couple of things. I was raised on a farm. I was grain-fed, you know, corn-raised, all that good stuff, fresh milk from the cow. And I'm in response to that gentleman that called earlier, I'm a male. I just sound like a female on the phone or
in person.
In person.
Yeah. And so it doesn't matter what you say the circumstances were. It just happened to be the accident of your birth.
I don't think it's an accident. I just think that's what God gave me.
Well, that's what I mean by that. I mean, it's not a contrived situation. Interesting. Thank you. Let me get to Jim, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Jim?
Hi, Ian and Carol. I have two questions. My wife asked me to ask these questions tonight. She just had breast cancer surgery earlier this year, and she was wondering the relation of soy products to breast cancer. Is there much noted, or is there much effect? And the other question is, a new substance coming in bread. It's supposed to be a dough conditioner that's appearing in a lot of the bread on the market now, called azo-dicarbonamide. Do you know anything about it or what it is?
I have no clue. And my general rule of thumb is if I can't spell it or pronounce it, I don't eat it, okay?
Yeah.
So just kind of stay away. We do know that the bromides added to bread pull down the thyroid, and there is an association between low thyroid and the formation of certain forms of tumors. So, my suggestion is to stay away from breads as well. But about the soy, yes, there is a connection between the soy and development of breast cancer. Any type of cancer that is hormone-driven, which obviously breast cancer would be affected by soy, because soy naturally contains huge amounts of estrogen. And so even some of the doctors who send their patients in to see me, their recommendation is to eliminate soy from the diet.
Jim, what was the name of that chemical again that's in bread?
Okay, it's, I could maybe spell it. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. It's called azodicarbonamide. Azodicarbonamide, I think.
Sounds like something that's in shaving cream or something. It doesn't sound like something that should be in bread. All right, let me get to Hal in Columbia on Coast to Coast AM for Carol Cimentacci, The Crazy Makers, How the Food Industry is Destroying Our Brains and Harming Our Children. Hal?
Great show.
Hi.
Carol, you mentioned the importance of water, and one of the most dastardly things that's happened to our country is the addition of fluoride. It's banned. You can't dump it in the ocean. You can't put it in landfills, but with a fluke of the law, we can put it in our water and drink it, and it's in prenatal vitamins, and it's terrible what that stuff does to life.
Well, Carol, where are you with fluoride? I remember my grandmother always used to get torqued up about fluoride in the water, too. Where are you with that?
I think it's a disaster in the making. I don't think it should not be there. It's a poison to the body, and he's absolutely right. Don't know where else to put it, so you put it in the drinking water. And, you know, I did not put a lot of that in my book because I was concentrating mostly on food, but there's a huge body of research showing that the fluoride in the water does have implications in terms of the brain and behaviors and so on. So I think it's something we need to campaign against. Keep it out of the water. Get filtration systems that filter it out.
I remember my grandmother, I swear to you, back, my earliest memories of my grandmother were her complaining about fluoride in the water. And it was probably 1965
well,
or 6.
Well, you have a very smart grandmother.
I guess so. We always thought she was a little on the loony side, but
no.
We never gave her enough credit. Sam is in Arizona on Coast to Coast AM. Sam?
Yes. Hello, Ian and Carol. Thank you for taking my call. Ian, if you'll bear with me, I have about 4 areas I'd like to ask Carol about.
No, I'll bear with 2 of them. Take your best 2. Your best 2.
Okay. One of them is the, I don't know, have you ever read the book Brain Trust, Carol?
No.
Yeah, that's about BSC, bovine spongiform encephalitis. And the author of that book is a microbiologist. He's got his PhD in microbiology, and he's done a 25-year study on this. And he's saying that most of the Alzheimer's today is actually misdiagnosed. It's really BSC, and it's mixed diagnosis Alzheimer's. You may want to do some research on that.
Interesting.
Okay, good. And your second point?
Yeah, and then let's see, which one do I want to choose here? Well, I was going to mention the fluoride, that was already covered, but also chlorine is about as deadly in the water. There's a Dr. George Price which said, he wrote a book, Chlorine Cholesterol and Coronaries. Maybe you've seen it. But
I think that's a really good point. There's been a lot of discussions about kids and chlorine, too. In particular, my kids are swimmers. And we always try to make them wash that chlorine off their body and try to keep as much of it out of their mouth. Is that a problem, Carol, as you
yes,
see it too?
Yes, that is. Chlorine is extremely toxic to the body. And so we want to get rid of it as much as possible. And, you know, it also kind of, Ian, goes back to this question that we were talking about before about your own body's innate ability to detoxify. Some people have trouble detoxifying that. And so they have even more difficulty. So steer clear of that.
Okay, well then. I'll tell you what, Michelle, let's get your question here and then save the answer until after the break. So, Michelle, you don't have to hang on the whole time. What do you want to ask Carol Simontacci, author of The Crazy Makers?
Well, it's a very short one. Thank you. I was told by my doctor, because my husband has cancer, that if he ate no sugar at all, cancer would not grow. Is this true?
Do you want the answer now, Ian? Cancer does feed on sugar, so he does need to eliminate a sugar as much as possible.
Well, let's go ahead and save the rest of that answer then. I think there's probably more to explore on that cancer subject next, too. The Crazy Makers, more of your questions and comments coming up. Carol Simontacci on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.